Alaskans, wherever you are, welcome to the Must Read Alaska Show, coming to you from somewhere in Alaska. This is the place where we talk about, you guessed it, Alaska, where we keep the mainstream media on their toes, and where we are standing up for what's right in a world run by leftists. You can find out more by heading over to mustreadalaska.com, and also checking out the Must Read Alaska YouTube channel for some really great content. But first, let's get this party started.
Welcome, everybody, to the Must Read Alaska Show. I'm your host, John Quick, coming to you live from somewhere in Alaska. I hope everybody's having a phenomenal weekend. I know I just got back from a trip, and when I left, I had snow everywhere around my house. When I came back, there was no snow, so I'm a happy camper. I want to thank everybody that listens, watches, and reads Must Read Alaska. If you want to help keep the lights on, just go to mustreadalaska.com, and on the right-hand side, there's a little donate button. Every $5, $10, $100 helps keep the lights on at Must Read Alaska. If you want to sponsor the number one podcast in Alaska, just email me, John, J-O-H-N, at mustreadalaska.com, and I'd love to have you sponsor the Must Read Alaska Show. We have a very special episode today, folks. It is the 400th-ish episode. We may land on 399 or 401, but we're saying it's the 400th episode. And I have the amazing Suzanne Downing with us. Suzanne, welcome to the Must Read Alaska Show.
Well, it's really great to be back. I haven't been on the show for about a year. And you've been doing this phenomenal job. You've had the greatest guests. And I hope that we have a chance to talk about some of that today. But it's really good to be here for the 400th. I mean, and maybe I'll come back for the 500th. You know, we've got a division of duties around Must Read Alaska. You do the podcast, I do the website and the newsletter. And that way we can get everything done. You've been doing a phenomenal job. And so you've had some great guests on, and I'm just happy to be included in them.
Well, this is going to be fun. I think it'll be fun to kind of reminisce about some of our favorite guests today. You know, one of the things that I always get asked is, how did Must Read Alaska start? And so I thought it'd be really awesome if you could kind of tell that story to folks. I'm sure you've told it, you know, many, many, many times, but we have, you know, guests from all over the US who have never heard the story on how the heck this little thing turned into a big thing called Must Read Alaska started.
Well, yeah, and I have told the story a number of times because I like to be really transparent about what the founding of Must Read Alaska was and then how it developed. So in 2014, I was still the speechwriter for Governor Sean Parnell, who was our Republican governor, who then got beat at the general election by Bill Walker. And so after that, I went to work for the Republican Party of Alaska as a communications director. And when I landed in that position, they really had no budget and they had no plan and they had no way for conservatives to talk to each other. But I knew from my experience of dealing with the media and watching how the media covered the Parnell administration and the outrageous things they did. And then I started hearing from other people in the party, the activists in the party, saying the media just simply doesn't treat us fair. We can't get our letters in. And so I thought, well, why don't we just do a newsletter for Republicans? And we will just start out with a newsletter. So a weekly newsletter. It started in April of 2015. So that means we're now in our, John.
Jeez, sorry.
There's a lot of pollen in the air right now. But so we are in our 10th year. We haven't finished our 10th year, but we've been going since 2015 as a newsletter. And then a couple of years later, after the Trump victory, I was encouraged by the chairman of the party then, Tucker Babcock. He said, you know, this is something that probably needs to be outside of the party so that it can grow, because things inside the party are just, in any political party, are just going to get limited. And so it needs to be somewhere else. So I started an LLC. I moved it out of the party. And after Trump was elected, I took it independent and just said, this is now an independent entity. It's no longer a party organ. And so I started with a newsletter, even an independent newsletter, then started the website in 2016 is when I started the website. And so basically starting as a newsletter, and what happened is lots of people who weren't Republicans wanted to get the newsletter because they wanted to get another view of the news. Everybody could see what was going on in the media in Alaska. It's kind of a little club, and the people who are in the media in Alaska really need affirmation from each other that they're part of the cool kids club. They all want to pretend they're part of the Washington Post cool kids. And so they are writing from a certain angle, and we all see it. And so basically I said, fine, we'll just write from the other angle. Well, you know, if they're not going to treat us fairly, well, by golly, we're not going to treat them fairly either. And so the role was really to keep the mainstream media on its toes. That was the first initial focus, because we wanted to make sure that if they weren't telling the side of the story, we were watching them and became a watchdog for the media. And that was one of the initial goals. Later on, I changed it to the motto of Must Read Alaska is a force for good, because it's more than just about keeping the mainstream media on their toes. We want to stand up for what's right. And so that became the working motto. And it's nice to have a motto to work under, quite honestly. What is your overall goal and purpose? So I've been running it for that many years. And as you know, I just turned the big 7-0, right? And that's going to get your attention when you turn 70. It's going to get your attention. And you start realizing that you've got to come up with a little bit of a glide path for your work and life balance. And I've got a lot of other family stuff that I take care of, things that I need to do. So this, in the meantime, you know, we started the podcast, and it grew, and the podcast has become so phenomenal. It's just been, it's like its own entity, and they connect well, because when you do a interview with somebody, I usually, you know, get a story up about it. You usually give me the liner notes on it, and we get a story up so people know who you're talking to. And I just decided that I probably needed a glide path for retirement. And that is kind of the phase that I'm in now, because last year, Must Read Alaska changed hands and went to a group called Alaska Gold Communications, Inc. And you are part of that as well. And I'm also a board member as well in that. And we have other board members, and we are looking for that big transition, how we can keep this going in the future. So we've had lots of challenges in the past, but now we're facing the challenge of we need to find somebody to kind of be the new editorial, I don't know, the mayor of Must Read Alaska.
I remember you and I chatting, I don't know, it was probably 2 years ago. And at the time we had the Facebook numbers were crazy, like so many, like literally millions and millions of people. The website numbers were crazy. We had just switched to Substack, and that was going really well. Did you ever think that Must Read Alaska would get as big as it has? Just to put it in perspective for folks that are listening, it's hundreds of millions of people reached. When you pull the Facebook data and you pull the website data and you do all those kinds of things and you compile it, it's a lot of people. It's sometimes daunting to, you know, we think that it's just folks in the nooks and crannies of Alaska that read this, but as people know, like people outside of Alaska are obsessed with Alaska. That's why there's more reality shows about Alaska than any other state. And so people from all over tune in and listen to kind of what's going on in Alaska. Did you ever think it would get as big as it is today?
No, I really didn't, because the original purpose was to help knit us together as conservatives, and to help us build community and build our ability to speak to each other and to get our ideas out into the public arena. I wasn't really thinking about it being some big thing. It was really more grassroots of an effort. And now it's really interesting, as I hear from Washington, D.C. all the time, and there are lots and lots of people in Washington, D.C. who read Must Read Alaska or check it every day. Mm-hmm. And I hear from other people in the Washington state. We have a lot of readers in Washington state because we have a lot of commerce with Washington state. So people go back and forth a lot, especially those who are involved in the fishing fleets and so forth, and oil and gas. So we have readers all over the world. Then we also have a lot of people who have retired from Alaska, but still want to be connected. And so they're the kinds of people that are going to go and they're going to read the Anchorage Daily News, and they're going to check maybe KTUU or something, but they're also checking Must Read Alaska, because these are kind of the three big pillars now. And some of the rest of the news industry, you know, has really had a difficult time, a difficult struggle, because they're supporting massive infrastructure, lots and lots of employees. Must Read Alaska is pretty nimble, and it's pretty it's got a small employee base. That would be me, and you. I mean, we're the kind of two people who are anchoring this, And so it's a little easier to be nimble when you're, when you don't have a big bureaucracy and you don't have a physical plant, and we're doing it from our homes.
Yeah. We don't have, you know, ginormous buildings with newspaper presses to figure, you know, worry about overhead. And so I think it's been fun to look back and see, you know, companies like that, that have kind of legacy media, mainstream media, we've seen them dwindle in numbers in terms of people buying newspapers and those kinds of things. And our numbers have continued to skyrocket, as well as other folks like us around the Alaska that are doing similar things. And I think, you know, I think that people in Alaska are very grateful. As I talk to folks, that you had the intuition to start this 10 years ago now. And, you know, it's David versus Goliath thing. And man, I just look back and think, I think Alaska's in a better place because Must Read Alaska started 10 years ago. So let's talk a little bit about the story of how the podcast started. So
yes. Oh, so let's talk about that, because it was your idea. It was your idea. And we started it in September of,
It's been
2020, I think. 2020 or was it 2019? But it was your idea, and we kind of put it together over that summer, and then we launched it in September.
Yeah, and I think I remember both of us thinking, mm-hmm. Well, do you want to host it? No. Well, do you want to host it? No. We need to find somebody.
But we ended up both co-hosting it for the first, I don't know, several months. And yep. And then Scott Levesque was our producer, and he ended up moving away to Florida. So he was kind of jumped out of the scene, and then you took it over entirely. And I said, okay, fine. This is how we're going to go forward. You do the podcast. I do Must Read Alaska, the website and the newsletter. And we'll just feel free to create. And you've just done incredible things. And that's the thing, is that when you delegate and then you let somebody just do the very best they can, and you give them creative license, you know, that's what you have done. You have done an amazing job, because now it's the number one podcast in Alaska, not just in political or anything else. It's number one. And I think it's because of you personally, because you've got a really great style. And I think it's because you are very kind to your guests, and you're very welcoming to them. You've had people on from both sides of the political aisle. I always enjoy it when you have on somebody like Jesse Keel or Andrew Gray, legislators who obviously I don't politically align with, but they come on your show and you let them have their say. And that's the beauty of it. You've done a really phenomenal job.
Well, I think it's important to hear from all sides of the aisle. And, you know, one thing my mom always taught me was kill them with kindness and be genuine about it. And so that's what I try to do. You know, I think it's, I want to give some kudos, as you just did, to Scott Levesque, because he really helped spearhead this to have it be able to start. Because at least I can speak for myself, I didn't really know anything about podcasts other than they were awesome and that we should start one. And he really helped, you know, open up all those accounts and get the voice intro. And he would also host a couple shows that he just did by himself throughout the week. And, you know, he really helped kind of pioneer this idea into going from an idea into execution. And, you know, when he moved on with his life, which is totally fine, you and I were in the position of saying, oh gosh, well, we got to keep this thing going. And, you know, who's going to do it? And I remember when we kind of landed the plane on, I would keep the, you know, baton going. I didn't know anything about, you know, all the sound stuff and the kind of engineering side of it. And so kudos to you for, you know, believing in me to be able to do that, because I was beyond green. I had to, you know, I was Googling what's the easiest way to sound engineer a podcast. Uh-huh. And, you know, I just think that that's a testament to the entrepreneurial spirit of Alaska, right? Like, let's build the plane. We're flying and we'll figure it out. And so far it's worked.
That's exactly right. So this has been a truly entrepreneurial project, because it started with nothing and no budget. And then, you know, for me, all these years, I have supported myself well enough, but I have sacrificed a lot for it as well, because I did not have a 401k for the past 10 years. to add toward my retirement. So it's the kind of something I did because I love Alaska, and I moved to Alaska in 1969, and I've lived there on and off, not completely, because I moved to other places. I always felt it was good for me to also get out and explore the world a little bit and see how other people lived. And I will tell you that living in Georgia for 3 years was one of the smartest things I ever did, because I learned a lot about American history, things that I never learned in school. But you know, then with the podcast expanding our range, this has been just really an amazing 10 years of just growth. And I've enjoyed every minute of it, quite honestly. And we're just hoping that we can find somebody who will take over the editorial controls of the website, put out the newsletter 3 times a week, or, you know, we'll just keep going with me as the editor of it for a while until that person sort of appears. Somebody's going to show up who can do my job. I don't know that anybody's going to be able to do your job, though.
So let's talk a little bit about, do you have any favorite guests? We've had, like I said, I think this is going to be around for the 400th episode that we have put out there. We've had a number of just different amazing guests, from presidents of countries to small town mayors in Alaska. Do you have one that sticks out that's kind of been maybe one of your favorite guests, and why?
The things that stick out is that it's always funny to me that you are getting people like the president of the nation of Palau on your podcast, because it's like, I hadn't even looked that up on a map. I wasn't 100% sure. And I also really enjoyed it when Dan Sullivan has come on the podcast, Senator Sullivan. He's been a great guest. I've also really remember very fondly when Charlie Pierce came on. And I liked that so much because I know you were his chief of staff when he was the mayor of the Kenai Borough. And he was he's always so plain spoken. And I especially like people who are just being themselves. And with Charlie Pierce, what you see is what you get. He's always himself. Yes, he's just the best. So shout out to you, Charlie Pierce. You're my favorite.
He's going to love that. I think one of my favorite times, I don't know if it officially counts as a podcast episode, but we did, I think for a couple years, a couple seasons, we would do the election night coverage, which, if anybody was watching us do it, it's like a comedy routine, because it's like we're some camera we found in our closet with some duct tape and an old mic and like a computer that maybe won't turn on or will turn on. And I remember we had one of the election night coverages at in Anchorage. And
was it at the Westmark or which one?
No, it was at somebody's office, I remember. And Congressman Don Young was on he came on for a couple times.
Yeah, that was at Larry Baker's business office of BSI Realty or Real Estate. And we had one of the rooms blocked off, and it was election night out there in the main room. And then we had our studio set up. That was fun.
It was a lot of fun. And, who's who of all Alaskan politics, current and past, came through and came on the election night coverage show. And I just remember Don Young coming on, Congressman Young, and it was just awesome to see him in his element. And he, the stories that guy can tell, there'll never be another guy like him. He's just awesome. So listening, being able to sit there and listen to his stories and him being around all of the people that cared about him and helped him get elected over the years, that was pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, we did. I remember we had Art Hackney on that night, and we had Josh Reback on, and people just wandered through, and we just sat him in the seat and let him talk. And it was a lot of fun. You're right. That counts as a podcast. Well, I hope you continue doing that. I hope that this year on election night in November, you're up in Anchorage and you're hosting something like that. That would be terrific.
Yeah, Bernadette Wilson came on a bunch of times, and man, she's quick with the one-liner. She can put anybody to shame in that regard.
Oh yeah, she's that woman is really quick on her feet, and she's very much a subject expert on all things political history in Alaska, and a great strategist. And so we need to get her on the podcast. She's now over at Alaska Policy Forum, and running that organization. And she would be a really great guest. I will continue to send podcast guests your way. I sometimes get on a streak and I send you three or four ideas and then I forget for a while, but you're doing a good job. You're doing what, two a week now?
Yeah, one or two a week, something like that. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. And you know, we'll continue to do the podcast and see where it takes us. One of the things you also did, which I think is awesome, is you, I don't know, the last year or two, you had a national column, I think in the Daily Caller. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I think that's a big deal. It's one of the biggest kind of publications that our side of the fence would enjoy reading. Tell me some things that maybe were valuable to you to be able to do that and have that as an asset for folks in Alaska to be able to read. It's pretty awesome.
Right. Well, just in the same way that you have had a column over at Newsmax, which is another very strong conservative news and opinion website. I mean, we're in a new kind of era. We're not waiting for the newspaper to land on our door. We get up in the morning. The first thing we do is look at our phone, right? And The Daily Caller was started by Tucker Carlson. And it is just a great news and opinion web magazine newspaper every day. And it's they offered me a column of a few years ago. I mean, I was writing for them occasionally and they asked me to write every Sunday. So I was writing every Sunday up until I think December of this last year. And then I went to Italy. And when I came back, I said, you know, I think I'm going to be done for a while. I need to focus on getting Must Read Alaska sort of into its new era. So we need to move it into its new scenario, whatever it is. We want to keep it going. We want to keep that conservative voice. We don't want the liberal media to be able to dominate our landscape. So I need to spend time on that. And when someday I am fully retired from Must Read Alaska, I probably will pick up writing for them again because I really enjoyed it. It was fun because I liked writing about national topics. And sometimes I wrote about Alaska topics too. And they were good to me. The Daily Caller was a really great organization to work with. And I still go there every day and read them.
That's awesome. So how has the political landscape changed in Alaska to you? Because I think, you know, when you're a speechwriter for Sean Parnell, you probably couldn't ask for a nicer boss who just, you know, full of integrity and all that kind of stuff. And then we get, you know, Walker and it's like a, you know, just roller coaster ride. And then Governor Dunleavy, who's awesome, but, you know, they're throwing darts at him as quickly as they can. How have you seen the political landscape change over the years since, you know, you've been dipping your toes in the political world?
Right. But it's been pretty savage this whole time, I think, since I worked for Parnell. I observed how dirty some of the political events were around him. I mean, the things that happened with the, quote, National Guard scandal, which was, I think, a big made up thing. I'll go to my grave because I was there. I watched this unfold. And so I saw how people were treated. And then, of course, Walker got into office pretty much because of that and a lot of dirty politics. And the people around Walker were all pretty much Democrats. And they wanted to tax Alaska. There's always this push to get an income tax going, or a broad-based tax, is what they call it, broad-based tax. So maybe that's a statewide sales tax. But even so, back then we were flowing a lot more oil. It was over 580,000 barrels a day. We're now down to about 480,000 barrels a day. And it's not really going in the right direction for, you know, being able to keep the state going with oil alone. So of course they've redone the calculation on how we get our permanent fund dividends, and they're scraping off more and more money. And this year it's 75-25, you know, 25% for Alaskans for their dividend and 75% of the royalty residuals, you know, what's available for government spending. And then of course, during the Walker era, they blew up Obamacare. They actually expanded Obamacare Medicaid into Alaska, which has put a huge burden on our state going forward. There's a lot of political results from that. So the oil companies kind of left and they've took their workers out. They're going to other places now because Alaska is not as favorable to work in. We lost about 10,000 oil workers and we gained about 4,000 healthcare workers. And the healthcare workers we gained are all essentially surrogate government workers because they're all getting paid through government transfers. And that changes the electorate entirely, especially in Anchorage. So Anchorage, you see the politics changing quite a bit. It's going from a conservative town to a liberal stronghold. And what I have seen around the world is once a city goes liberal, pretty much goes downhill and never comes back. So I'm very, very pessimistic about how we're managing things in Anchorage because we have a different kind of voter now. And we have a lot of people who are takers and not actually providing, and not producers. People who work in mining, people who work in oil, they understand that you've got to produce things in order to have an economy. And healthcare doesn't really produce things. It just, there's a lot of money that gets transferred around from taxpayers to government and back to healthcare employees, which, you know, God bless them. They're all good people, but it's just different. So we're looking at a little bit of a different state now, John, and it's a little fragile unless we get more oil going and unless we get some mining going, might end up being a much more liberal state than it was the one that I grew up in.
Yeah, that famous article, I think by Politico, it's probably been 10 years from now, turning Alaska purple seems to be playing out in front of our eyes.
It does. I think about that often. I mean, that Alaska is, this is how you do it. You get some policies and you change they're playing the long game. Let's just put it that way. They're playing the long game. And over the past 10 years, we have seen them be very effective in getting more Democrats or people voting more Democrat. We still have 140,000 registered Republicans. We have a lot more people who are registered in the undeclared category, about 265,000. And we only have about 70,000 who are actual registered Democrats. But that big persuadable center is the battleground that everybody goes after, the people who are not particularly with one party or another. Across the country, we're seeing more and more people sort of get away from parties. They just feel very disillusioned about the parties themselves. And so the battleground is expanded to the United States the same way.
Yeah. Well, we're 25 minutes, 30 minutes in here. Do you have any kind of last minute thoughts here before we head off? I'm sure we could probably go another 2 hours.
Well, we can do this again.
Yeah, we could do it again. But, you know, I think it's been an awesome time this last, I don't know, 4 years or so on the podcast. Hopefully there's another 4 years. You and I have had a phenomenal time. I want to give a shout out also to James Baisden, who was also for a summer, he hosted, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months worth of shows once a week. And so he was one of our other kind of co-hosts who did an awesome job. He's going to come on tomorrow, I believe, with me, and we're going to kind of do the same thing, kind of reminisce. I think that the Must Read Alaska show has been a fun project, and I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to host this, you know, 3 years ago or whatever, when Scott left and we kind of had a crossroads of what to do. And it's just been a phenomenal experience. But I wanted to give you the floor for any last minute thoughts on the show or Must Read before we head off.
Well, thank you, John Quick. Your friendship has been incredibly important to my life. And we've had such a wonderful relationship since I think that time we met at a fundraiser down in Kenai somewhere.
Yep.
And yeah, remember that? And so we've really built something great with Must Read Alaska. But you did a lot of things to make the Must Read Alaska website what it is today. And by saying that, I mean, there's a lot of things behind the scenes that people don't see, the things that you have done to make that website go international. And you've done a lot of things with social media to make Must Read Alaska more visible to more people. And then of course you've taken on the podcast entirely and grown that from a seedling all the way to the most popular podcast in Alaska. So it's really been fun to watch, and we'll just keep going. And I won't be around here forever, folks, because like I said, I turned the big 70 and I'm looking for a way to retire. I won't be doing this when I'm 80, I promise you. And so we got to find new talent, new people, and bring on new voices, new conservative voices to take things forward. But it's been an absolute joy.
Well, folks that listen in, I want to thank you for listening, watching, and reading Must Read Alaska. We do this all for you, really. If you want to help keep the lights on here at Must Read Alaska, just go to mustreadalaska.com. On the right-hand side, there's a little donate button. And every $5, $10 helps keep the lights on here at Must Read Alaska. If you want to sponsor the Must Read Alaska show, which I would love for you to do, just email me, John, J-O-H-N, at mustreadalaska.com. Tomorrow, I believe we're going to have myself and James Baisden, who's a dear friend of mine, on, and we're going to kind of reminisce about some of our favorite guests again. And it's just been a great ride. And I want to thank the folks that download our show and listen to it and watch it and enjoy it. And hopefully we'll have another 400 episodes to come. But until next time, I'm John Quick from somewhere in Alaska. It's been fun, Suzanne. And we're going to have you back on sooner than a year from now. That has been too long. So.